faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast, where we wrap up the week that was, only running down the most insane things. They have to be things we've either never seen before, in modern times, or in the world. It's insane that I can do this every week. But here we go. Insane thing number six. Barely an hour after Donald Trump was sworn into office, the first doors were kicked in by ICE. You could tell they couldn't wait. Through Thursday of this week, they had arrested, picked up 5,500 criminal or terrorist aliens. Pretty good work for your first week. And there were shockingly bad hombres in there. Ironically, every bit as bad as what Trump once warned during 2016 the Democrats would let in if they were put in office. Rapists wanted by Interpol. Murderers wanted in their own countries. Pedophiles, just a terrorist, absolute disaster. But what was weird was how fast those doors got kicked in. And folks wanted to know, how did they put all that together so quickly? Well, that's this week's first insane thing. Here's J.D. Vance explaining that on Sean Hannity's show on Fox.
How do we find them? I mean, you have known terrorists, but you don't know where they are. Known cartel members, but you don't know where they are.
Well, it's crazy, Sean. Sometimes you're right. We don't know where they are. Sometimes we actually do. And that's one of the craziest things of the last week. Just for me, you ask what is shocking to me. It's that many of these violent criminals, we knew their addresses. We knew their names. We just needed to send somebody to go to their house and get them the hell out of the country. That really should shock the American people.
We've known where they are.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we've known they've had terror ties.
We've known at least that they had violent criminal backgrounds. And we haven't done anything until about 8 days ago when Donald Trump became the president of the United States again. It really should shock the conscience of the American people. One of the things you heard on the campaign trail, one of the criticisms of me and of the president was, well, yes, we have 20 million illegal aliens. We have, close to a million violent criminal illegal aliens, and we don't know where they are. It turns out we actually do know where a lot of them are. We just haven't had immigration enforcement, and that's what's changed so radically.
As one of the Democrats running the Biden administration, you have to have a black heart. And I'm talking on the edge of mental illness, if not full-blown mental illness, to know where these people are and leave them there. But I'm not surprised. Remember poor little Jocelyn Nungery, raped and tortured for the last hour of her life and then murdered and discarded like trash, stuffed in a culvert? Remember one of the two guys who raped her wore a monitoring bracelet the whole time. It was an ICE monitoring bracelet. Come to find out that he was a Trende Aragua gang member too. So yeah, we knew where he was. This really shows folks the next level hatred and contempt that the Democrats have for the American people, including their own voters. Insane thing number five, and I'm going to do a longer podcast on this coming up, but the central question that'll be answered by this Trump administration is whether Republicans can actually physically take control of the federal government and its weaponized agencies, or whether Trump's appointees will simply move their stuff into the building and no one will listen to them. After all, we've reached the point where these agencies are staffed mostly with Democrats who, to the extent that they answer to anyone at all, only answer to Democrats, have complete contempt for Republicans. It's gotten to the point where Republicans who were supposed to do oversight over these agencies, like think Republican-controlled House of Representatives, can't even get the most basic information out of them and have to rely on whistleblowers to tell them what's going on when they damn well have a right to know what's going on. The most jaw-dropping example of this recently has been the 33,000 pages that Republicans in the House of Representatives requested from the FBI, the Secret Service, the ATF, and the Department of Homeland Security regarding the two Trump assassinations. Want to know how many pages they got? That would be zero. Another example this week, Senator Ron Johnson told RFK in the confirmation hearing that he had lobbed no less than 17 subpoenas or request letters at the Health and Human Services Department. mostly related to the shots, COVID shot, gain of function research, the creation of COVID, all of that, because RFK would now, of course, be over Fauci's old records. Want to know how many of them he got replies to? None. Why? Because the bureaucrats in these agencies take the position that Republicans are beneath them and they just don't have to respond, even to subpoenas. What do you do with a workforce like that? Whatever it is, Trump had better figure it out fast. Because if he leaves these agencies intact in any way, when he gets into the helicopter in 4 years to fly off when his term's over, they'll be waiting for him wherever he lands with handcuffs. This is a Game of Thrones. And how well Trump does at cleaning out these agencies will directly determine whether he gets to go home to Mar-a-Lago or he spends the rest of his life in prison. I am not joking. This is what's at stake. And a lot of Americans don't realize this. They think, well, you know, Trump's in charge now, so he'll just fix everything. No, not at all. In fact, in his last term, Trump failed completely to take control of the FBI or the DOJ. Not his fault. But he now clearly recognizes that much tougher measures are in order. So do the Democrats. They are determined to maintain their rock solid control over these agencies. How will we know at the end who's won? Well, here's a clue. If Trump hasn't managed to fire tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, definitely gonna have to be tens of thousands, he will have lost. He got a good start this week, letting senior FBI leaders know that they have been ordered to retire, resign, or be fired by Monday. Yeah, that dropped on Thursday. At least six senior FBI leaders have been ordered to get out of there. Those who oversee cyber, national security, and criminal investigations. That's where the fake law, lawfare investigations into Trump and other people in his administration came from. So that's a good start, but you can bet they won't go easy. I've expected that Trump's going to have to spend a couple of years in litigation with these people, but this week showed how really hard this is going to be. First, here's what Trump did. He started with an executive order making a lot of the federal workforce Schedule F, meaning they can be fired at will. Then he did something hilarious. He figured out how to email from one email account all federal employees who were subject to firing. And he let them know a bunch of things in a couple of emails this week. Thing number one, if you don't show up next Thursday to your job, because remember, 90% of the workforce, federal workforce, works from home now. This is going to be hard because a lot of them don't even live in the DC area anymore. They've been gone for so long. They've bought homes and are living in other places. They don't have parking spots. It's going to be wild watching them come in. But if they don't show up by Thursday in person, they'll be automatically fired. So that was one email. Email number two. By the way, if you would like to retire or leave, we'll give you 8 months of pay and benefits if you want to resign. And all you had to do was respond to the email with the word resign. Well, Politico, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal covered it. They're all freaking out. So what did they do? Well, federal employees started with a lawsuit. They are suing Trump, his administration, the federal government. Forget this. Harassment. They say they don't want to get emails directly from the boss, that Trump is harassing them and causing them duress. Instead, they want Trump to mail their upper management. Why? Because we all know why. Democrats know why. That's why they're leading this lawsuit, because the upper management will simply ignore Trump's request to fire the lower downs and will simply refuse to pass on the offer. So this is a game. It's a chicken and mouse game. But folks, how obnoxious. Can you imagine having your lawyer call your boss and tell him to stop emailing you? It's too much email. It's harassment. And you don't want direct contact? It's actually kind of a genius idea to direct email the employees. But why is Trump doing this? He or someone working for him probably got to look at this poll from Napolitan Institute. It's a survey. And it found this week that just 45% of federal managers, the federal government, would follow orders from President Trump. Yeah, you know what that is? That's a constitutional crisis. Well, the Washington Post and the Federal Workers Unions got into the swing of things. telling people not to take the early retirement deal and not to accept being fired. Simply don't leave. Oh, and they're also telling them not to come into work on Thursday if they don't feel like it. Everything will be fine. So we'll see how all that goes. Folks, it's almost as if our country isn't on the verge of bankruptcy. And by the way, 2 weeks ago on Sunday, Elon Musk put out a very dire email that folks need to understand. We are on the verge of bankruptcy. One little financial wobble and it's all going to come crashing down. This is not a game. People are struggling to afford groceries. Middle-class people who don't already own homes can't afford to buy them because the interest rates are so high to control the inflation. And these yahoos think they're going to be on a meal deal for the rest of their lives. Anyway, cutting federal employees is a key part of this. Elon Musk, by the way, just put out a plan to cut $1 trillion off the $2 trillion annual deficit. That's how much we print and borrow every year by fiscal year 2026. You realize, folks, that's 8 months from now. This is a level of aggression for government shrinkage I've never seen before, and I love it. But again, this is leading to all kinds of things we've never seen before, where federal employees are beginning to resist the idea that Donald Trump is in fact president and can in fact fire them. Listen to this. The Inspector General of the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, was fired this week by Trump. She was one of 16 fired, but Phyllis Fong wasn't having it. She sent an email out to her colleague saying she didn't think Trump could do this and she wasn't going anywhere. So they had to send in law enforcement security agents to escort her out, according to Reuters, as in physically remove her from the premises. Trump says he fired her, his administration does anyway, because she led the department during the fraud in the Feeding Our Future program, $250 million scheme, and took no action whatsoever. Yeah, you know what else she did, though? The USDA, I don't know if you know this, they created bird flu, the H1N5. Yeah, the one that CNN keeps raving about. It's in our milk now. We're all going to die from it. That, yes, that bird flew through gain of function research. Yeah, those were their grants. She oversaw all of that, too. Gain of function research has been banned by the federal government and by Congress, at least funding it anyway, because that's what gave us COVID. But that wasn't the only federal resistance this week. Trump this week froze most of the grant money and a lot of the spending on foreign policy programs. I think there's only like two countries we're still giving foreign aid to. Well, over at USAID, which doles out that money on behalf of the State Department, 50 plus workers decided they would just ignore Trump and continue sending the money. So the Trump administration had to place dozens of USAID workers on administrative leave for allegedly scheming to thwart President Trump's executive orders, requiring, again, an immediate pause of federal aid funds to overseas programs. Acting USAID Administrator Jason Gray placed more than 50 career civil servants and foreign service officers on paid administrative leave while he conducts an investigation into the matter. Folks, just freezing a program is going to take a major struggle because these employees don't want to answer to Trump. And folks, you know how we got here? Honestly, started with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan letting the FBI run wild, do whatever they want, not respond to Republican subpoenas. And they were very quickly taught when a Republican's in office, just gap them off. And now Trump's got to figure out how to bring these people to heel. It's going to be a hell of a fight to watch. Insane thing number four. Iran, specifically the Ayatollah, told its proxies, the terrorist groups it's been funding with the money that Joe Biden gave it, $300 billion to be specific, just turned tail. Yep, the UK Telegraph reports that Khomeini warned all of his puppet governments and his proxies that none of them are to in any way attack or otherwise menace American interests. They want to, quote, avoid provocative actions that could escalate regional tensions. What do you mean, like October 7th? Which the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post agree was armed, trained, financed by Iran. Folks, when Trump left office, he had such heavy sanctions on Iran, they couldn't move. The people were starving in the streets and darn near on the verge of overthrowing the regime before the Biden administration threw him a lifeline, lifted the sanctions for no reason, gave them tens of billions of dollars we had frozen, and then allowed them to commence taking in more than $300 billion in oil revenue. Yeah, it was so much money that we actually saw something in the modern era we haven't seen. We've only ever read about in books. Piracy. Houthi pirates on the Red Sea. Who'd have thought we'd ever see a thing like that in modern times? But, you know, Democrats, right? Who knows what they're capable of? Well, what a turnaround, folks. I don't know if you remember this. January 28th, this is how Iran paid us back. Three of our service members were killed in a drone strike in Jordan. From the UK Telegraph, quote, forces and allies in the region have been instructed to act with caution as the Iranian regime feels an existential threat with Trump's return. One senior Iranian official told the Telegraph from Tehran, in Iraq and Yemen, forces have been told not to target any American assets. And if they do, they are explicitly warned against using Iranian weapons. They've been told to keep defensive positions for a while and to avoid any actions that might provoke the Americans. Hilarious. Proving how the world is beginning to look at America as if it is two distinct countries with two distinct sets of leadership and two distinct sets of enemies and allies. For the Democrats, Iran is practically an ally that's allowed to kill the occasional U.S. soldier. Under Trump, they're an enemy. When Republicans are in charge, no, they don't like Russia much, but they don't want to be at war with Russia either. We're not allies, but we're not enemies either. Under the Democrats, Russia, foremost enemy on earth. See how this works? This must be very confusing for the world. Wars even pause or begin again, depending on which party is in office. Like when Donald Trump lost, there were no Russian troops at the Ukrainian border. As soon as Biden won, the troop buildup began. Russia knows the Democrat Party is an absolute existential threat to Russia. By the end of the Biden regime, under the guise of NATO, they were hurling long-range missiles into Russia, hitting actual population and military centers. And Trump comes in and he gives his envoy 100 days to end the war. Why? Because Russia's not really an enemy of the Republican Party, only the Democrat Party. It is a bizarre set of circumstances. When Democrats are in charge, the whole world knows they hate America and they hate Americans and that they can get away with a whole heck of a lot, but not when Trump is in charge, as BRICS is about to find out. You know, they've been talking some smack about starting their own currency or at least dropping ours, which really would be devastating if they fully did it, because we've already got enough inflation problems anyway. Well, has anybody thought to, you know, maybe ask them not to? They're major trading partners of ours, most of them. Well, Trump finally did, issuing a warning to the BRICS countries that there will be 100% tariffs if they attempt to replace the U.S. dollar with something else or stop trading in it. He wrote, the idea that BRICS countries are going to move away from the dollar while we stand by and watch is over, he put in all caps. We are soon going to require a commitment from these seemingly hostile countries that they will neither create a new BRICS currency nor back any other currency to replace the mighty U.S. dollar, or they will face 100% tariffs and should expect to say goodbye to selling in the wonderful U.S. economy. Folks, do you know who's in BRICS? One of our best allies and trading partners, India. I mean, that is a massive level of disrespect. And here's the thing. Almost 20% of India's exports are bought by us. They are legit screwed if Trump tariffs them. And you know what's about to happen? They're about to exit BRICS. At a minimum, you're going to see them go, oh, you know what? We love the dollar. Which, by the way, is exactly what Putin said in the media within days of Trump winning. He actually said, you know, we love the dollar. We like trading the dollar. You're leading BRICS, dude. The whole purpose of BRICS is to get everybody to drop the dollar. See the power we have? Folks, this is why the mainstream media hates tariffs. Remember when Democrats used to love tariffs? The mainstream media hates tariffs because if Trump starts wielding them, he's going to get an immediate response. And the American people get a look at how much power we actually have. Our economy is twice the size of Europe's. Do you think they'll be like, nah, we don't want to sell there. We don't care. No, everybody's going to snap to attention. I mean, even inside BRICS, look at this. South Africa? Are you kidding me? We buy like $3 billion worth of stuff from them a year. There's no way they're going to be like, nah, we don't care. We hate the dollar. They're going to do what Trump wants. What's so astonishing is we have not had a president go, hey, dude, you can't do this with the dollar. Insane thing number two, that Donald Trump or any human being would actually propose to send in Tulsi Gabbard, RFK, and Kash Patel directly into the three most weaponized areas of our government. These were not your daddy Trump's nominees. These, all three of them, here's what's fascinating, were actual victims of either the agencies they will lead. RFK was actually censored by departments within the Health and Human Services Department. Kash Patel was the guy who unraveled the Russia collusion hoax for Congress. He was a chief investigator. Turns out the FBI and the DOJ were spying on him, his family, and his relatives the entire time, illegally, by the way, because they had no predicate. He hadn't committed any crimes. And Tulsi Gabbard, also a victim of the intelligence agencies. Remember, she was put on a terror watch list because within hours of criticizing Kamala Harris. So these are people who are incredibly skeptical of the deep state. And folks, you're going to watch the deep state do damn near anything to keep the three of them from being confirmed, because they're not owned by anybody. And if they're not blackmailable, what is the deep state going to do? Here's just a sample of what their confirmation hearing sounded like.
Let's let our men and women in law enforcement kick down the doors of terrorists and narco traffickers and pedophiles and put those people in prison where they belong.
The fact is, what truly unsettles my political opponents is I refuse to be their puppet.
Question. And by the way, Bernie, the problem of corruption is not just in the federal agencies, it's in Congress too. Almost all the members of this panel are accepting, including yourself, are accepting millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical industry.
Now think for a minute what it'll mean if we could potentially get these three confirmed. RFK would be over Health and Human Services, the FDA, the NIAID, and the NIH. Why is that important? Those are Fauci's old agencies. He's NIAID. He's also over the CDC. Folks, RFK has been suing the FDA and the CDC because they've been hiding vaccine injuries and deaths. We know that because one of his lawsuits has been partially successful. The ones they hid that were reported to the vaccine adverse event reporting system. They're pretending they didn't happen while telling everybody it's safe. Meanwhile, there were thousands of instances of myocarditis, pericarditis, like heart damage, blood clots, aneurysms, death. He's uncovered some of it, but he hasn't managed to get all of it. Folks, understand this right now. I don't know if you remember this lawsuit. This wasn't RFK, but he filed a brief in it against the FDA, where the FDA and Pfizer said, oh, we'll give you the shot data trial information in 75 years. We'll give you the, you know, the deaths and the side effect information in 75 years. Yeah, well, guess who would be over the FDA? RFK. They're going to get it all. Folks, they're going to get the gain of function records. They're going to get all the records about COVID. They're going to get all the records about the funding of the labs to develop COVID and other diseases from Africa to Ukraine. They're going to get the Echo Health Alliance data, everything related to COVID, the shots, all those major scandals. RFK will be over it. And that's why you saw the absolutely outrageous, desperate level lying this week. Everybody that the deep state has any kind of compromise on, or if they even think the deep state has compromise on them, is trying to take down RFK. It got so stupid this week that Elizabeth Warren was even claiming that we wouldn't have any more vaccines if RFK was approved, which is ridiculous. RFK is like, what, my kids are all vaccinated, my grandkids are vaccinated, what are you talking about? But then again, I mean, Elizabeth Warren did take $1.5 million in the last election cycle from the pharmaceutical company, so there you go. But think about Kash Patel. Kash Patel would then be over the FBI. He's going to have access, unless they've destroyed it all, to all of the information on all of the FBI's scandals. I mean, Congress can't even get basic information like who set in motion the investigations of those school board parents who complained about the transgender boy raping that girl. Just even the most basic stuff that they can't get information on. All of the background on Crossfire Hurricane, the Russia collusion hoax, all of those FBI scandals. Well, guess who'd be in charge now? A guy who's actually willing to turn that stuff over. And folks, you saw the power of this between these nominees. Senator Ron Johnson, going back to RFK, said, listen, I have launched 17 subpoenas or requests for COVID shot information, side effect information on the shots, decisions made around COVID and lockdowns, where we now know they knew there was no science behind it. He hasn't gotten a response to a single one. So these are agencies that right now don't even respond to congressional subpoenas from Republicans. Imagine if one of these guys took it over. Now, the creme de la creme, Tulsi Gabbard. Here's the thing. Do you know what the director of national intelligence does? Most people don't. If you ask them who are the top cops in the country, who are the top spies, they probably say CIA. They're not. The director of national intelligence is the apex spy in the country. Honestly, in the world. That would be Tulsi Gabbard. The director of national intelligence offices were created to see and synthesize all of the nation's intelligence, from the GSA to the NSA, the CIA, to the FBI, to all these little agencies you've never even heard of that do intelligence. It will all run under Tulsi Gabbard's fingers. That's a shocking amount of power for somebody the Democrats had such contempt for. They put her on the terror watch list inside the TSA just to harass her. If even one of those three nominees gets through, it could be a game changer in terms of what would come out. I mean, heck, just with Kash Patel, right now, we can't get anything out of the FBI on the Trump assassination attempts. I mean, shoot, the golf course shooter had 17 cell phones. Who was he talking to? Who were his handlers? Love to know that. Bet you Kash Patel would like to know that, too. The FBI won't say. See what we're talking about here? I mean, the potential for the American people actually getting to know what these people have done, and I think things that have shocked the conscience, is huge. And that's why you saw the near desperation level of just these senators were throwing anything they could at these nominees because they can't control them. And that scares the heck out of it. I don't even know that the senators care that much. I think they're terrified of the deep state. And I think the deep state has compromise on a lot of these people, or they're just afraid to draw the ire of the deep state. So folks, even if we can just get one of the three through, game changer. And you might say, well, okay, but what if these agencies have destroyed all this evidence? Well, there's still the agents who worked on all of this, the witnesses, those who have the clearances to know. You can't kill or disappear them all. This stuff, some of it at least, will come out if we can get some one of these three in. Finally, insane thing number one, that crash at Reagan International. Not that it happened, but that it hasn't happened so far. And what came out with it happening? The most eerie thing this week was finding, to me, the Washington Times editorial dated 1 year ago in which they forecast that the DEI policies the Biden and Obama administrations would cause exactly that kind of crash at Reagan International Airport, or one like it. How did they know? Well, they did the story of DEI, which, kid you not, kills. They had to go all the way back to the Obama administration 2012. When Obama took office, the only way that you could become an air traffic controller was to pass a series of tests and get a very specific test result. Most of the people who did happened to be white, and they were overwhelmingly male. And so after a class of air traffic controllers graduated, applied for jobs, the Obama administration, on the verge of hiring them, can you imagine this, says, no, we're not. Why? They're white. That's it? That's it. 1,000 of them, deep sixed, right there. To keep the air traffic controller pool from getting any whiter or more male. Well, that resulted immediately in a lawsuit. That's every lawyer's dream. I mean, that is such a clear-cut illegal civil rights violation. Well, the lawsuit, the litigation around it, stretched on for a decade. During that time, some of the 1,000 did eventually manage to get their jobs. Others just gave up and went on to other careers. But the message was very clear. If you're white, if you're male, no interest in you being an air traffic controller. And besides, what happens, you know, when a Republican comes back in office or a Democrat comes back in office? So a lot of people were also dissuaded from applying, since those who did the best on the test tended to be overwhelmingly white and male. Nothing we can really do about that. Well, that really put the damper on hiring for air traffic controllers. And so as it is right now, we have only 75% of those that we need. And so as the crash, you know, in the hours after the crash is happening, I'm on the air and I'm saying, I bet you this is DEI related. Not necessarily that the air traffic controller, him or herself, you know, was a DEI hire, but I bet you it was understaffed. And literally within hours after I said it, the New York Times comes out and says, yes, they were understaffed. There should have been two people doing that job. In fact, it's this way across the nation, and that has resulted in so many near crashes. Just people overworked, having to pull double shifts. It's the last kind of double shift you want somebody to do. It's just too dangerous. Well, this, to me, is the most shocking thing this week. Folks, I keep telling you, the Democrat Party, truly, if you watch them, you will see examples of this. To them, in their bizarre moral shared universe, the worst thing you can do to another human being is to offend them. Killing them, distant second. Offending them is the absolute worst thing. And so when you have to choose between human life and offending somebody, yeah, go with you know, offending somebody. You don't care about human life. We're watching human life get trampled in so many ways because of this bizarre moral system that the Democrats have. I want you to hear from former air traffic controller Michael Pearson. He was on the Laura Ingraham show, talking about how the airline industry has lived with this for years.
This is a preventable disaster. The system has been under attack through the DEI and the FAA bowing to wokeness since 2010, since the Obama administration. The lack of staffing is directly attributable to the Obama administration terminating the lists of eligible well-trained air traffic control statements in 36 universities across the country in 2013 because they were too white.
So as you can see, it's still going on. But what happens when for a critical job like air traffic controller, you put aside scores or accept a lesser standard in order to meet your diversity goals? Well, you gotta make a few compromises in safety and danger to human life. Take a listen to this. Folks, this makes me want to drive. This makes me afraid to fly. Again, former air traffic controller Michael Pearson on the Laura Ingraham show.
The FAA also at the same time implemented an immunity program. So you think you're seeing legitimate statistics, you're not. In the old days, before 2010, the immunity program, if an air traffic controller got two airplanes too close, too many times, they would be decertified and retrained. Now, they're not. All they have to do within 48 hours of being noticed or being investigated for a potential separation error, they're called operational errors in the FAA, the controller just simply has to avail themselves of this program that gives them immunity. And when I say immunity, I mean immunity. The FAA cannot retrain these people. If somebody has a repetitive instance of malfeasance or lack of competency, the FAA, because of this immunity program, cannot rectify the situation. They have to basically allow the person to remain in the same position. It's very, very difficult for the FAA to retrain a controller, and it's attributed to, quite frankly, the union and the FAA working together to basically use this program to gender the statistics.
Near better collision.
With Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.